Welcome to Love in Uniform. My name is Patty Fiala. We're proud to be part of Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. This is a copyrighted, trademarked podcast owned solely by Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. A couple of years ago, I was introduced via social media to Susan Stoker. Susan is the amazingly popular author of more than 50 romantic suspense novels. She's a New York Times, USA Today, and Wall Street Journal best-selling author who has a heart as big as the state of Texas, which is where she used to live, but I understand she's now in Tennessee. She's married to her own military man and living her own happily ever after. So, Susan, welcome to Love in Uniform.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So your first series debuted in 2014, and since then, did I count right, you have about six series now?
Yeah, it's something around there. Some are shorter than others, but yeah, that's about right.
Okay. Are you writing, you're still writing in all of the series, or are some of them finished?
No, some of them are finished. And, you know, I say they're finished, but every now and then a novella kind of pops up using those old characters. But yeah, generally, I think right now I'm writing three currently. So.
Okay. Wow. So do you, can you write two in those at the same time? Like, do you write on one day, you'll write in one series, and maybe the next day you'll have a inspiration for another book in a different series? Or do you try to finish one book in a series before you move on?
No, I'm a write one book at a time kind of person. So I'm writing in three different series, but I have to finish a book before I move on to the other. So that can be hard sometimes, though, because I forget what's going on in the series if I've written two other books and two other different series. So I have to reacquaint myself before I can dive into the next book. But
sure.
Generally, so far, it's been working for me. I prefer to write one series at a time, but that isn't really how it works all the time.
That's true. Best laid plans, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So your newest release was Defending Morgan, and that just released last week, I think, right? And that's book three of your Mountain Mercenary series?
Correct. It came out on March 5th. It was this week. I don't know when this is going to air, but yeah, it's this week or recently. So yeah.
Okay. And so tell me a little bit about Defending Morgan.
So Defending Morgan is book three in the Mountain Mercenaries series. And the Mountain Mercenaries are all retired, not retired, or previous Special Forces guys, Delta Force, SEALs, Coast Guard, Marines. They've kind of done it all. And their mission is to save women and children who are in precarious situations, whether that's they've been kidnapped, whether they're in abusive situations, whatever it is. And Defending Morgan starts out with the guys down in the Dominican Republic. They've been sent to rescue a little girl who was taken by her non-custodial father out of the country. And when they get there, there's another woman there with a little girl, and they ask her what her name is, and they're floored when she says it, because she's been on the news for the last year. She's been a missing person. And so they were shocked to find her because they weren't looking for her, but there she was. And so the story kind of picks up from there, where they get back to the States and they're trying to figure out who had her kidnapped, who took her out of the country, and why, and why she wasn't killed. Because honestly, a lot of people who disappear have, you know, ended up dead. So so it's kind of this little mystery suspense woven into the love story all at the same time.
Okay. Wow. How exciting. So you've developed a very large fan base in a very short amount of time. Can you tell me what your number one rule is as far as, you know, marketing or your social media presence?
Marketing is hard. I mean, I think we all know that. None of us, buy my book. You know, we all want to just be like, everyone should buy my book without me having to tell them. But it doesn't always work that way. But the one thing I try really hard to do from the second I started was to be honest in social media. Social media, everyone lies. You know, they post pictures where they look beautiful, but it's filters or whatever it is. But I try to be honest. And just be like, hey, I'm sitting on the couch with the dogs and my house is a mess and watching TV. What are you guys doing? So that's the thing I try to do, is just be me, be honest, be genuine, and hopefully that comes through.
Yeah, I think it does. I've seen your pictures on social media, and I admire you. Just here it is. Like it or leave it, here I am. And I think that's awesome.
Well, and I think part of that is I've never been like one of the popular crowd, even in high school and stuff. So I don't even know how to play some of those games. So I'm kind of a nerd. I'm kind of a dork, and it is what it is.
And what's the saying? And nerds will rule the world. So
that's right.
Could be worse, right?
Exactly.
So tell me how many books you release a year, because you've really amassed a lot of books in 5 years.
I have. This year I actually have 11 books coming out, and that was kind of a fluke. I didn't really mean to have that many, but it just kind of happened with projects, and people asked me if I wanted to do stuff, and of course I have a hard time saying no. But generally I try to shoot for 8 or 9, and that's still a lot, but I don't have children, and I think that makes a world of difference. I don't have to feed them. I don't have to get them to school. I don't have to bring them to soccer and gymnastics and cheerleading, all those things that takes up a lot of time. So I can literally sit on my couch for 12 hours and write if I want to. So I think that gives me a little more ability to put out more books a year.
Oh, sure. Well, and, you know, having the imagination to come up with that many storylines in a year, that's amazing.
That helps
amazing.
Too. Yeah.
So are there any little real life stories mixed in between the pages?
Not really. I mean, people ask me all the time, which one of your heroines would you like to be? And I'm always like, none, because I'm so mean to them. I kidnap every other heroine, and they get the crap beaten out of them, and they get buried alive and thrown in oceans. I guess they're little things like, maybe a heroine is not a good cook, or maybe she likes to drink Midori sours, which I really like, or something like that. So those parts of me are in my books, but the overall stories generally no.
Okay. Luckily, you've never been kidnapped, so that's
exactly
great.
I've avoided that so far, knock on wood. So we'll just hope that continues.
So then tell me a little bit about a day in your life. Do you have a rigid word count that you want to hit each day before you move on to something else, or is it just whatever flows?
Kind of whatever flows. I get frustrated when I hear people saying, if you want to be a real writer, you have to write every day, because I don't think that's true. I think everyone has to figure out what works for them. And maybe that is writing every day, but maybe it's not. Like, I will get up. I'm a morning person, so I get up fairly early. I work out 3 mornings a week, and then I sit on the couch, and I do my email and some business, and then I start writing. But for myself, I find that I'm usually done writing by noon or 1. If I'm really getting good on a book, I can write longer than that. But my brain kind of just says, you're done. And so then I just shut it down, and I start doing something else. But I write a book until I'm done. So that might be 5,000 words a day. It might be 10,000 words a day. But then when I'm done, I might take a month off. And it just all depends what people need and how they can write to the best of their ability, I think.
Sure. So, you know, you mentioned before that you don't have children, but I've actually seen your fur children in pictures on social media. So tell me a little bit about your fur children, because some of the pictures I saw, you had multiple dogs, and some of the pictures just one or two. So tell me about how many you have and what their names are. And
yeah, so right now we have two. We have Callie, who is an English Coonhound, and then we have Annie, who is a Terrier Basset Hound mix, we think. And they're both rescues. We've had up to 6 dogs at one time.
Wow.
We found that 2 is a good number, because we can take them for walks together. They can fit in the car at the same time. It just is easier with 2. So.
Oh, yeah. And they get along, apparently.
They get along. Our dogs, they're not, because they weren't raised together and they had different lives before they came to us. They were not puppies. They don't have to have each other, but they definitely like each other, which is a bonus.
Yeah, that helps. Yeah, that sure helps. So what's something funny that they do that makes you laugh?
Gosh, well, the 2 we have now are pretty laid back. They sleep a lot of the time. But we had a dog, a Basset Hound, that we got when he was 1.5, and he only had 1 eye, so one-eyed Aussie. And he was smart. He would do things like we had a loaf of bread on a counter once, and he pulled the dishwasher open using the dish rag that was hanging off of it, and then used that to climb up on the counter to get the bread. And then he opened the bread, like he didn't just rip into it, he opened it, and then took four pieces of bread out to the couch and had them laid out in front of him, like he had his own little smorgasbord or something. I mean, it was really funny. We're like, what the heck? So yeah, he was a super smart dog. He was a jerk, but he was a smart dog.
But that's really amazing, because you said basset hound? So they have short little legs hound. For him to be able to do that.
Right. So, you know, he had to get up on the counter somehow. So that's why he had pulled out the dishwasher so he could stand on it. So, and it was surprising that he didn't just eat the whole loaf, because as a basset hound, they're known for their love of food. So, yeah, he just picked his four favorite pieces and went on his way. So, yeah.
Oh, funny. Wow. So, recently, I see that you went to Australia. Now, was that for a book signing or was that a vacation?
It was. It was for a book signing, but me and a friend, L. James, we went over there early, like a week early, and we went up to Cairns, and we went snorkeling in the Great Barrier Reef, and I got to hold a koala, and so we kind of combined business with pleasure on that trip. It was great.
Oh, that's awesome. I was watching your pictures, and they looked fantastic, and some of the things that you don't normally see pictures of Australia, I saw some of your did you go to a zoo, or where did you hold the koala?
Yeah, it was like a wildlife sanctuary kind of thing. And so, and the only place you can still hold a koala is in Queensland, which is in the north of the country. So when we went up to Cairns, that was one thing I wanted to make sure I got to do, is actually hold a koala, not just stand by one and smile. So that was awesome.
Okay, well, that is really cool. So talking about travel a little bit, what is maybe your favorite vacation?
Australia was pretty awesome, but I'd have to say my favorite was when me and my husband went to Antarctica, and it was strictly vacation. There's no, like, hotels or anything there, so there wasn't any book signing, but it was just amazing. We went ashore, and the penguins just waddle right on by you because they don't know humans, so we weren't a danger to them, and they just ignored us, and the whales were everywhere, and these huge icebergs. I mean, just everything about it was just overwhelming and awesome. So that was probably my favorite.
Okay, well, and so does that take a while to travel to Antarctica?
It wasn't too bad. We took it was a 10-day trip. So we flew down to Chile and then down to Ushuaia, which is in the tip of Argentina, and then took a boat across the Drake Passage, spent 5 or 6 days tooling around Antarctica, and then came back. So, yeah, it's not like you have to take a whole month out of your life to go to Antarctica. It's actually with planes and trains and all those things. It's closer than we thought. And, you know, one thing, people always were asking me, well, why? Why did you go? And my answer is, well, why not? It's Antarctica. Why would you not want to go to Antarctica? So, yeah.
I think most people think vacation as laying on a beach somewhere in Antarctica just seems like uber cold, and you forget about the things that you'd see that you wouldn't normally see on a vacation.
Right.
So,
and I mean, it was cold, but we went in December, and down there, that's their summer. So the cold was relative. It was probably in the 30s and 40s. So it wasn't like negative 20 or anything crazy like that.
Sure. No polar vortex, right?
Right, exactly. Not negative 50 as it was here in the States this winter.
Yeah. So how many reader-author events do you try to get to a year?
I've done more in the past than I'm doing this year. This year I'm only doing four. I'm doing two international and two in the U.S. And I think reader events are hard on authors because a lot of us are introverts who can extrovert when we need to, but we prefer to sit at home on our couch with our own people. But and there's so many events nowadays that it's getting harder and harder to get to them all. And so and they're tiring. It takes us away from our families and our writing and things like that. So I think a lot of the authors I've talked to are actually cutting down on the number of events they're going to.
Yeah, I've been hearing that too. And for just all the reasons that you mentioned. And so but they're fun. But I agree with you. I'm an introvert mostly too. So to have to extrovert on demand is a little tiring.
Yeah, exactly.
So at either a reader event or just happenstance, what's one of the funniest, weirdest, or most memorable things a reader has ever said or done to you?
For the most part at events, readers are pretty laid back. There hasn't been anything crazy at events, knock on wood. I get a fair amount of messages and emails and stuff from readers, but I think the one that really strikes home the most, that's the most memorable to me, is it was a couple of years ago. I had just sent out a newsletter with my newest pre-order, and I was like, hey, I just put this book up for pre-order. And I had a message back from a woman who said that she literally was on the verge of ending her life. Like, she knew how she was going to do it. She had the plan. And then she got my newsletter and was so excited to read my new book that she was like, well, I can't do it now because I have to wait and read this new book. And so, yeah, it floored me. Like, you know, as an author, I write stories I like to write and it's fun, but I don't always think about the actual impact that I have sometimes on people's lives like that. It's amazing and scary kind of at the same time because, you know, it's this fun thing I'm doing, but I love that my stories can touch people that much. That's just the most amazing compliment ever. And I hope to this day that she's okay, that she got the help she needed and you know, she's all good, because I haven't heard back from her, but so I'm hoping that she pulled out of the hole that she was in and she's okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, that just, it goes to show you what an eye-opener to know that you have that kind of impact on someone you don't even know.
Right. And it's stories. But, you know, if they're heartwarming enough and if they touch someone in just the right way, I think everybody probably has those stories. We just don't always hear about them.
Yeah, that's true. So what's the strangest thing you've ever autographed?
Oh, gosh. You know, I honestly haven't had too many strange things, which I guess, thankfully, like, no one flashed their boob and wanted me to sign anything. So mine's just been the normal stuff, which is okay with me. I'll sign anything. But, yeah, you know, if someone wanted me to sign their flesh or something, that might be a little weird. But I do know of an author who somebody wanted their signature on, like, their wrist or their arm. And then the girl went immediately to a tattoo place. And have the signature made into a tattoo, which is a little odd, but, you know, I guess if someone's that touched by an author, but it's kind of a compliment and creepy all at the same time.
Yeah. I had a gal, and she's in a wheelchair, and she has this bright fuchsia wheelchair, and I signed that. And she has tons of author signatures on her wheelchair. It's really cool. She'll never be able to get rid of that one because it's a keepsake.
Right,
now.
And she'll have it with her all the time. Exactly.
All the time. Yeah, that's true. Well, Susan, thank you so much for joining me on Love in Uniform. It's really been a pleasure chatting with you, and I really hope we are able to meet one day in person.
Definitely. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it so much.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Thank you for joining me on Love in Uniform. Please join us on Facebook at Love in Uniform, where you'll find links to this podcast and many more, pictures of my guests, and maybe a game or two. You can follow me on my website at www.pjfiala.com. And, of course, I'm also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Pinterest. You can find links to all of those sites on my website, as well as information about my latest release, sales, or recipes, if that's your thing. Also, if you watch this podcast, you'll be able to see Susan's links and her latest book. And, one click that, why don't you? Join me next month when I interview Marianne Jordan.